Welcome to another edition of Lex Talk History, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Now, here's your hosts, Lexington History Museum Executive Director Mandy Higgins and WUKY's own Alan Lytle.
Hello again, Mandy.
Hi, Alan.
Wow, April is just flying by as the month of Lexington 250. And of course, it's the spoken word and also music. And it's just been an incredible vibe going through this town.
Just an vibe is exactly the right word. It is incredible. You know, we talk at the museum a lot about the artistic community in all of the ways that it's influenced Lexington. But I think the work of this month really highlighting how deep those roots are and how broad the written word and artistic expression around words in Lexington has been fantastic. Just also, I'm like a music nerd. So for me personally, it feels so good that this is what we're doing in April.
Yeah. And before we get to our guest, I mean, he encompasses actually both,
yes.
Which is really kind of cool.
Yeah.
What's going on at the museum in April?
Yeah. In April, we are hosting students, doing some oral history workshops, the spoken word. So that works there. We're also participating in some events outside of the museum with talks to some local organizations who are history minded, including the DAR and the Mayflower Society. And then the Sayre School is celebrating and has invited the museum to give a talk about 250 as well, 250 Lexington as well. So it's a really exciting month, both in the museum, because of course everything is great in the museum, but also for us to get out in the community.
So if you want to know more about all of that, you can go to...
Please visit us at lexhistory.org, lexhistory.org, or come to the museum Thursdays and Fridays, 12 to 4, and Saturdays, 10 to 4.
All right. Now we pivot to Lex Get Into It.
All right. So this month, we are very lucky to have DeBron Thomas, WUKY's own DeBron Thomas, and a local DeBron, as all of you I'm sure know, is a local music legend here in Lexington. And since April for 250 Lex is music and the written word, we couldn't think of a better person to talk to us about Lexington's music history.
I really just think you couldn't find whoever your original person was unavailable, and I was just upstairs.
There was no other person ever that we would think of calling except for you, DeBron.
Well, I'm glad to be here. You know, we've talked about this before. I genuinely am excited that Lexington is celebrating 250. It's a big milestone. It's a big accomplishment, and I do appreciate the way that they're celebrating 250 by actually trying to acknowledge all of the things. But again, there's so much history, so many people who have paved the ways and all kinds of things. So I'm just really, really grateful to have the opportunity to talk about it.
Yeah, you know, every month it's like, how do we even think about approaching this topic, right? And so in January was health, and we talked to a public health professor because we wanted to get it. This idea of health being a community. And February was Black History Month, and we talked about redlining and some other pieces that are very present. And that's the goal for me this year, is this idea that just because we're celebrating 250 years, it all is coming to today. I can't really think of a better concept for that than music and the written word, particularly in Lexington. Just last night, we had that great literary event about celebrating the written word in Lexington. And as I was in the audience thinking about everyone that was on stage, how many of them made the comment that they were standing on shoulders of people who were there before them. How do we even begin to approach that?
I think that it always kind of comes back to just having that, like, acknowledgement. You know, there are different ways that you can execute it, but having the acknowledgement and have it be forefront of what you're doing is an important thing. Like, growing up with my parents, they instilled in me all of the histories of the civil rights movement and all that stuff. And so, like, yes, I was the person raising their hands saying, well, I mean, you know, Rosa Parks actually wasn't the first person to sit on a bus, you know, like that kind of stuff. And I think that sometimes, you know, you can go a little too deep into it. But in terms of being able to really push things forward, you have to start with where it started. You have to acknowledge the things that made possible the things that are happening now. I think that with just in terms of literary genius here in Lexington, like, the legacy goes, you know, probably farther back, but, you know, I'd say it goes all the way back to William Wells Brown and then Gail Jones. And, you know, there are so many incredible writers who have either lived here or are from here. And I think that as our culture, at least from my experience in Lexington, it seems like if there's an arts culture and there's a scene around it, the people make sure that it, you know, it's continued to grow. But I do think that sometimes we silo ourselves and things like that. And that's where the, like, we're only talking about this person and not this person who also existed at the same time and may or may not have had a larger global impact. You know, I would say Marvin Gaye, for instance. You know, we talk about Henry Clay in this community so much. And I mean, you know, that's great. That's a compromise, I guess, one could make. But, you know, Marvin Gaye is somebody who just about most singers will probably tell you that he influenced them in some way, or even musicians. And the fact that his dad was from Jessamine County and his mom was from, more or less Lexington proper, and that there are still Gays and Pences that still live in our community, and even one of the most, like, notorious musical families, the Mapsons, who are really big in the church circuit, they're kin to Marvin Gaye. Like, you know, and I'm just like, why are we not talking about that? Like, I mean, it's great. We can talk about Henry Clay, and that's fine. But, like, here's another person who also had a pretty global impact. And I think that when we, like, talk about people and we talk about just influences, we have to be really intentional with, like, understanding that I know that there's not a way to tell everything all at once, but piece by piece, you got to be able to include it. Otherwise, there's a whole lot of context that's missed.
Yeah, I think that's really so much of the work we're trying to do at the museum, and so much of the opportunity in this 250 is we know a lot of the really famous stories, but there are so many more, particularly local stories that have a local impact. And I'm glad you mentioned Marvin Gaye, because I always love to get people's brains realizing that, like, that's a Kentucky story. For all of his success outside of around the world, that started here. And just like that, you have Les McCann, who, frankly, I think for a lot of Lexingtonians didn't exist in their minds until he passed, unfortunately. And the McCann, he learned to play by ear at the Charles Young Center, that these very Lexington places and moments lead to international stardom. Stardom maybe is an overstatement, but international acclaim for singing and for music making.
Yeah. So I was talking to have a conversation the other day with one of our reporters, and I was telling them that, about Calvert McCann, because we're talking about the Phoenix Hotel and the irony around, you know, the fact that the library is there now and it's a very inclusive space, it's intended to be a place where everybody is welcome. And that was not always the case with the history of that building. And I pulled up the photo, Calvert's photo of Louis Armstrong when he came to play at the hotel, and getting the picture of him walking out on the bus and in real time seeing the protesters. And, like, you know, it is one of those things that I think about where I'm like, there are a lot of things that happen in Phoenix Park. There are a lot of things that happen out, you know, on, like, in that particular space. How often is it like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do this because of the history of this space, or maybe we should be more intentional about this because of the history of this space? And those are the things that, like, sometimes are missing threads. And again, I understand that, like, not everybody is going to hit everything all the time, and that's okay. We're human. But once you know, you have to be intentional about it. Otherwise, you're just continuing to cause the same harm over and over and over again.
Right. And how do you see Lexington doing it better, being intentional, particularly around written word and music?
So I, you know, when I moved here, every musician that I talked about who was from here would all talk about the heyday of the 90s, specifically because of the way in which so many venues didn't care about musical genres. So you'd have punk bands on the bill with a hip hop artist, with a poet, with another rock band or a folk singer or a jazz band. And it was, you know, it was that intentional of we're going to be as weird and welcoming as we possibly can. And then some of those venues closed and opportunities around the state and around the community started to kind of not necessarily be the same for musicians. And I think at that point, it's like a survival mode thing where, okay, I'm going to get this gig and I have this gig now. Let me play this gig so that I can get paid and feed my family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that those things kind of happen, but I do think that since then, there has been a little bit more of an intentional effort. There have been several festivals that have come and gone that have been that have had inclusivity and diversity as an intention of the way that they build things. And some shows do that. But I do think that Lexington really has to have like an intentional conversation about it, about how do we do this in a way that's equitable so that we're supporting our art scene in a way to where not only are we supporting the artists that are here, but we are cultivating a culture so that new artists can emerge and, you know, do all that stuff. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to like be super negative, but I will be honest and say that I have spent a lot of time trying to make, you know, I've been putting a lot of effort personally into trying to make the music scene a little bit more inclusive. And I've seen a lot of things that have happened over the course of years, but then, like, you know, in my own personal situation, I not necessarily being as connected, but still being a part of the music community, watching things happen to where there are things and people who should be being intentional about things that aren't. And I think that it's just that sometimes people need a nudge. And I think that's the way that we have to just continue to nudge each other,
right?
You know, call each other in instead of calling each other out, and really doing it in a healthy way so where someone can say, oh, this was a mistake that I made, or this was something that I could have executed a little bit differently, so that the next time you're working on it. And because it's not I think that sometimes people see specifically diversity, equity, inclusion as like something to check off a box, but it should just be woven into what it is that you're doing so that everyone has an opportunity and everyone has an equitable opportunity to, you know, to thrive.
Yeah, that is thinking about the heydays of the 90s and not siloing those genres. How much of that do you think is a Lexington, or was it a moment in sort of music history?
I think it was definitely a moment of music history. Like I said, I was not here. But from all of my friends that I have talked to about this over the years, it really just seemed like you had a lot of leftover stuff culturally from the 70s and 80s in terms of shops and venues that were still open and aren't open anymore. And I think that business practices changed a little bit. I definitely feel that, you know, I definitely feel like Lexington wasn't unique in that way. But it was unique to Lexington's history to have that happen at that point in time. And it's kind of fascinating because, like, when I growing up listening to my mom talk about music from Kentucky, I would have just assumed that it was mainly country music because that's what she listened to on the radio growing up. It was country and gospel. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have some of the R&B stations that you can get over the airwaves at night. But I think that with that happening in Lexington at that point in time, there were just so many things. Because, like, MTV was a big thing for exposing people to music. And there were, I would give a big shout out to the late St. Gerard Figgs. You know, his band, Groovezilla, was on, they had their music on Road Rules. They had their music on MTV. And there were lots of bands that were, and Paul Kay was here, and he was, you know, rest in peace, Paul Kay. Like, there were so many different groups. And then, you know, not to mention Mad Militia, which was the hip hop collaborative that we are still seeing, like, the new hip hop artists are coming up in Lexington, like Tony Wavy, big shout out to him. You know, we only have a Tony Wavy because of the Shiesties and all of the other people who, you know, really paved the way to make these spaces, because there weren't hip spaces for hip hop in the 90s. Mm-hmm. They had to carve those own spaces, and they carved those spaces the same way they did all other music, is we're going to do a show when everybody's going to be on the same bill. And, you know, I feel bad that we kind of got away from that, because as a music lover myself, I love that. I love when things are vastly different, but also there's reason to be complimentary. But at the end of the day, like, it's all about the execution.
Right.
And sometimes with that, you dig to the same well. It's like, well, we're going to put this show together, but we're going to have the same five bands that you already saw last week. They're just going to be in a different order. Or, which I can say that I've been guilty of, here are the same musicians in two different iterations of different bands, you know. And that's fine, but there were a lot of talented people who deserve an opportunity. And I think that we can be better about that. I mean, we have, you know, definitely have been better about it. But I think that it's like, it's a twofold thing. The music community, the arts community, has got to be intentional about how they do things, and then the rest of the community has to continue to support it. Yeah. So that it can continue to grow.
Yeah. Lexington has a really, it seems, supportive culture for music and for the arts. You know, you can find a show almost every night. How does that play out if we think about it historically? Some of the places maybe that don't exist or have anymore or have changed over time. Can you give us a little of that?
Well, so like there are a lot of, this is the thing that really makes me aware of the time that we're in, is knowing how many music venues we've lost just since COVID. Mm-hmm. And like, even looking at Cosmic Charlie's as an example, like Cosmic Charlie's has had a long iteration of a history in Lexington, because it was originally the Fish Tank. Well, started by the same people who owned the Fish Tank, and then Fish Tank closed, Cosmic Charlie's was thriving, and then Cosmic Charlie's moved, and then Cosmic Charlie's moved again, and then Cosmic Charlie's closed, and now we have the Fish Tank. Mm-hmm. Again. So like, you know, and I mean, and I think that even in that time, like, Linus closed. And Linus was, well, where Cosmic Charlie's was the first time was the, you know, the Linus Music Emporium, where you had all kinds of bands. And I would be remiss not to make this connection, but WUKY does have a connection to Linus Music Emporium, because Bobby Ray, former host of Crossroads Radio, was the booking agent there for a long time. And I know that there are a lot of artists that came through here that were playing there, and, you know, so on and so forth. But I just think that we need to do a better job of cultivating and supporting the venues that we have. And that's all venues. I mean, including like house venues, because there are so many people throwing house concerts. I mean, I met Russell Allen at a house concert, you know, like that. Sometimes you have to create the space if it's not already existed for you, so that someone else can appreciate it. But even with just the traditional venues, we've lost a lot of places. Mm-hmm. And over the course of Lexington's history, I know there are legendary places like the Dame, and which, you know, and the Rock.
R.I.P. the Dame.
R.I.P. the Dame, R.I.P. High on Rose, mm-hmm. the Rockledge. I know that there are lots of others that I'm missing, but it's like there are so many venues that we've lost, and now we live in a city where we don't have like a real mid-sized venue anymore. Like, it's Rupp, Manchester, and the Borough. Mm-hmm. In terms of size, and then like, and then after that it's Al's, the Lantern, so on and so forth. And I think that lack of that middle that middle ground really is, you know, because there are a lot of artists that are on the rise. Like, I mean, when I worked at Willie's, you know, we had St. Paul and the Broken Bones. Mm-hmm. Before anybody knew who they were. Tyler Childers played there all the time. I mean, that's where I met Tyler. You know, and there were all of these acts that would come through these small venues that you'd go on to see on NPR. You go on to see, like, Moon Taxi is a great example.
Yeah, I saw Moon Taxi at the Dame.
See? You know, and they and then they were on, like, Letterman and all right. of this stuff. And when you, and the beautiful part about that is when you go and see a band at a venue like that, you get to say, hey, I saw them before this. And then when you see them on TV, it's like you feel a little bit of ownership, mm-hmm. like, oh, in some small way, I helped support them get there.
Yes.
And that's how you continue to build the scene.
Yeah, that is a, you know, when you talk to Lexingtonians that have been around for a long time, they often talk about the Continental Inn as being a place where you could see mm-hmm. those same up and coming bands. And the thought of, you know, that historical legacy that Lexington is it's a place that punches above its weight in almost everything, but particularly in sort of getting bands at the start. So you mentioned Tyler Childers, like playing at Al's, playing at Willie's. Imagine being in a room with some of these amazing musicians that holds 200, maybe.
Well, that's the other thing that the other part of it is that we don't share. I mean, I think that you as a historian understand this, that we just don't share a lot of historical things. Mm-hmm. When I moved here and I learned, like, it blew me away that at one point in time, like J.D. Crowe in the New South just playing at the Holiday Inn, you know, and the Bluegrass Festival is out there because that's where it's always been. And, you know, like, I don't know. It just really, like, I just think that it's really, really amazing that we've had so many different kinds of music in this community that's had a really big piece of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't talk about it. And I know that, like, you know, in the street, there's definitely is a difference now between mm-hmm. going out and seeing shows versus the way that it used to be, especially with the way that streaming is and stuff. But there should be more ways to support the artists and the community at the same time without trying to rely on the traditional model of, well, I got to buy this record, I got to go to the show. I mean, you should still do those things, but like there's other ways to get that information and stuff now too.
I think, you know, thinking, having this conversation and thinking out loud, I wonder how much of it is that we take it for granted because it's, you know, it's there. So thinking a couple of historic examples, Lexington is the first American performance of Beethoven, which is Transy's orchestra is going to do it again, which is cool. The Narcotics Farm and jazz, right? Like music, and maybe this is true in all towns, but we're in Lexington, so we're going to make it about Lexington. It's sort of ubiquitous, this opportunity to engage in whatever we want, whenever we want. And so it's something that you don't talk about because it's just there. And maybe that's because, like, as someone who loves music, I think that way. Like, if I'm spending my money, it's probably to go to the Bar Hole and see somebody or go, you know, wherever. And I think that is maybe part of who we are in this town and how we take in sort of art and music and not just music, but songwriters and folks who are around music, producers and those sorts of things.
Yeah. That's the funny thing about music. Well, it's in just art in general, is there are so many different ways to approach it. And especially with the advent of technology now, it's very like for like less than $150, you can make a very basic studio quality recording at home. Like, you know, and I think that because of that, a lot of artists have utilized that. But I agree with you. I do think that we take it for granted because I think that COVID was one of those things that was a stark reminder for a lot of people because we had to be locked in our homes and we couldn't go out and we just watched these things that we loved just not be able to survive because they couldn't make any money. I mean, I remember watching the you know, Cosmic Charlie's was doing a bunch of live streams at that point in time. And I, you know, somebody, one of my friends that I know was doing the very last one and that was it. And, you know, I hated that Cosmic Charlie's had to move so many times, but also I hated that that was the way that it ended.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one story. There are so many things across the country, across the world, you know, of that happening. And I don't know. I just, like, it does make me sad because I know that we could be better and I know that we, you know, but also there are a lot of outside factors like the economy, you know,
right.
That, well, and I say specific to the economy, one thing that I've always heard from musicians who are around in the 90s here in Lexington is a lot of them feel like people just don't want to pay to see music anymore, because there are people with the mindset that I paid $5 to get in a show in 1997. Why in 2025 should I be paying any less than or any more than $5? And I'm like, look, I get it. I understand. But unfortunately, musicians and artists don't necessarily get to, like, go with inflation.
Right.
You know, like, we're expected $10 is maybe the most you can, you know, if you have a T-shirt, I think maybe like $20, $25, people are going to roll their eyes at and be like, well, I don't know. But it is what it is. I mean, you know, you don't survive unless people support your art or buy your art. And if there are people, if the people who want to do that don't have money, then you can't sell it.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a whole nother topic on a different podcast, but I have a whole 90s largesse speech at some point we can discuss off the podcast. But that, sort of shifting a little bit, but thinking about Lexington as a community and a community that comes together around music, where have you seen that in your career? Where have you really felt that?
So one of the first things that I did when I started working at the station was I did a local feature called Local Music Mondays. And I remember having a conversation with Alan Lytle at the time, and he was like, are you really going to be able to bring in that many people, you know, bring in somebody once a week? And I was like, yeah, man, like there are a lot of really talented musicians. And I remember at that point in time, like a lot of people appreciated what we were doing because they got a spotlight on the air and a lot of people got exposed to, you know, to that. But it's really, it's just all this, like, we're all just using our individual platforms to uplift each other, right? Like, I did that because I saw that there was a need for that in our community. There was not a way, I mean, even still now, and I would make this a critique of the station as well, as I don't think that we do as much local as we could. And I don't think that there is enough of a highlight on the local, you know, all of the local things, whether you're talking about music or writing or other forms of art. But I do think that, you know, when it comes down to it, the community is going to support itself. The community is going to support each other. And, you know, I hate to have to say this, but a lot of times it comes at the result of tragedy of some kind. You know, I remember when Magnolia Boulevard played Railbird, and then like 2 days later Todd Copeland passed away. I saw how many people came together to make sure that his son was going to be okay. My drummer Daniel Moeller, one of my very dear friends, actually, you know, ended up going on tour with them to fill in for Todd. Even when I played Todd's music on the radio, like a lot of people were connected to it. And the same thing happened when Robbie Cosenza passed away. I hate that the thing about it is it has to have come on the back end of something terrible, whether that's somebody passing away or something else going on in the world. But I think that when people are activated, they understand the need for that. How we continue to move forward, though, is figuring out a way to get people to become more active, not in times of crisis, so that we can be proactive about things instead of being reactive, which I think is a general rule of thumb.
Yes.
Looking at you. Yes, I'm looking at you. Please be somewhat proactive. I don't know. I mean, I the thing that I love about the music community is we continue to lift each other up. Even in the instances of like the people who are like on the rise, like I see that Tyler brings Kentucky bands with him all the time when he's going on tour. Justin Wells tours with a lot of different Kentucky bands. Jocelyn and Sweet Compression also do the same thing. So, you know, Magnolia Boulevard, Local Honeys, there are so many different bands and artists that are doing these things. And even Abby Hamilton right now has been organizing things at the Green Lantern to do that. And I mean, she was on Sunday morning CBS, you know, like.
She's fantastic.
Yeah. You know, that's what and I remember when Russ and I were having a conversation about this one time, because oftentimes I hear the term world-class artists, that we need to bring world-class artists here. And, you know, to answer your question, the way that we continue to lift each other up is there are plenty of world-class artists that live and breathe in Lexington, Richmond, Berea. Like, this Central Kentucky is ripe of so much talent. And there's no reason that we need to run to France to get somebody, you know, to bring somebody in just because they have a certain level of pedigree when there's someone who's probably just as good as them, just hasn't had the opportunity. And I think that being intentional about providing those opportunities, because, like, I know that I, as a musician, only got the experience that I did because when I was growing up playing music with my dad, all of his older musician friends were like, oh, let me show you this, let me show you that. Hey, can you help me carry this? Cool. You want to play this gig? You know, but I wouldn't have had any of those opportunities if other people hadn't fought for me to be able to have them. And I think that's what we kind of got to continue to do, especially in these times, is really lock in and do what we can to uplift everybody.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I think a lot of towns and states would say that that is, they do that, right? Like, you hear about wherever we're in the midst of flooding in Lexington, or in Frankfort, and they've already put out a Frankfort Strong, right? We always bring that around. But I feel like, particularly in the arts community in Lexington, historically and today, that is really true, that Lexington artists, Kentucky artists protect each other and lift each other up and try to promote each other in a way that maybe we don't see in other places. And so thinking about that long history, are there any examples that you like to show of that work?
I mean, I think that it just kind of, so my mom is from Adair County, and I didn't really understand how much Kentuckians love Kentucky until I moved here. Yeah. Because my mom had a very different experience, and she left Kentucky for lots of reasons. But, you know, I know that her education in Kentucky was great, but her college years were not necessarily the things that she appreciated the most. So I understand that, like, with my mom, it's like a kind of like a different thing that she left Kentucky to move to California. Right. But when I moved here and I started talking to people, I quickly realized, oh, you literally ride with anybody from here. Like, it doesn't matter if you lived here for 5 minutes. Like you know, you're one of us. And so, like, I wouldn't necessarily say that I have a specific example, more so than I see it all the time. You know, I see it all the time in the way in which, like, different genres of music will, you know, collaborate. Or if there's like a, hey, you know, Kentucky was really important in this particular thing, you know,
getting the Marvin Gaye story.
The Marvin Gaye story. I mean, there are so many, like, there's the Judds, Keith Whitley, My Morning Jacket. Like, there are so many bands and music. And, you know, going back to the point that you made earlier about the Narcotics Farm, there are so many musicians that came through Lexington because of that. I know for sure that Esther Phillips was here, and I actually had a back and forth with the late, great Dwayne Kramer of the MC5, because he had written a book through University of Kentucky Press about his time in the Narcotics Farm.
Wow.
And so, yeah, like, there are all these stories that we have to share. There's all this music that we have to share, and so there's really no reason for us to not uplift. And as a Kentucky transplant, even though I will say that my family is from here, I also feel that sense of pride. I mean, especially with Tyler, getting to see someone who you see, like, this person is really, really talented, and all they need is one opportunity, and then they work hard and they get that opportunity, you know, they earn that opportunity themselves, and then they take that platform to bring other people along.
And yeah, I was hoping you would tee that up, because I'm sure many of our listeners know, but one of my favorite things was watching Tyler's video that Silas House directed, and all of a sudden saying, oh my gosh, that's my friend DeBron. What is happening? And it's like the perfect, it's exactly the encapsulation of what you're talking about. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess what do you want to know specifically? You want me just to talk generally about it?
Whatever you're comfortable with. Oh. But so Tyler's song, mm-hmm. In Your Love, is what the video for it was mm-hmm. directed and produced by Silas House and his partner, Jason Kyle Howard, to set us up.
So, yeah, not to like spoiler alert, I hadn't heard the song. I didn't know anything about the song. I guess I can share the story. So, I had received a phone call from Silas with this cryptic voicemail. It was like, "Hey, there's going to be a national number that's going to call you. It's about a super secret project. Just letting you know, like, if a national number calls you, please answer it." I was like, okay. And then I like pulling the curtain back. When I come down and produce, I typically like to leave my phone at my desk so that I'm not tempted to check my phone every 5 minutes. Also, there's nothing more annoying to me than like my phone buzzing while I'm in the middle of something. I've actually gotten in the habit of turning it on airplane mode when I'm doing stuff. But for me, physically leaving it in another room is helpful to focus. So I had done that and came back upstairs and I had like 2 missed phone calls. And so I listened to the voicemail and it was this person talking about this music video. And I was like, okay, I don't know what this is about. So I called and the person was like, "Oh yeah, I'm sure Silas told you all about it." And I was like, "Actually, I have been told nothing. I have no idea what you're talking about." And that was when I was made aware that it was a music video for Tyler. And so I was like, "Oh, okay. I don't really know if I don't know. Like, I don't know." But I was like, "Okay." So eventually, I said yes, and it was really cool. When I got on set the first day, because I am the only person in that video that actually is in, with the exception of Colton and James, I'm the only other person who's in multiple scenes in the music video. I'm in the mine, and I'm also in the dinner scene, and there was supposed to be a connection between my character, but, you know, editing, sometimes you have an idea for things. I mean, this is a thing in music, too. You have an idea for things. You want to make transitions for things. And then you get to the point to where it's kind of finished. And it's like, if I touch this in any other way, it's not going to have the same integrity. So, you know. So, from a storytelling standpoint, I understand. And my feelings weren't hurt or anything. I was just happy to be. I was just so thrilled to be part of it. But I will say that being on set, it was very clear when I realized what the story was about. Again, still hadn't heard. I will be honest. I hadn't heard the song until he played it at Bonnaroo.
Wow.
I knew that he was going to, I had heard on set that he was going to play it at Bonnaroo, mm-hmm. but I didn't know what the song was. When I heard the song and I listened to the lyrics, also understanding what the music video was about, I was like, oh no, this is going to be huge. You know? But I think that everybody on set, even when we were working on the music video, like felt like the heaviness that, like, this is going to be a big deal. This is going to be a big deal. And I remember when, what is that dude's name? Not, This Is Our Town guy.
I don't know his name.
Yeah, whatever.
You can tell where.
Was it Jason Aldean?
That probably, yes.
Well, anyway. Right.
One of the Jasons that's not Jason Isbell.
Yeah. It's like they have the Hollywood Chrises. This is the Nashville Jasons.
Yeah.
But I remember when that song came out, I was like, yo, Tyler hasn't released this yet. This is going to be the perfect, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I really just love the. I really just love the attention that Silas and Jason brought to the story, because understanding that Gino helped with that last verse, this is the first like song to this level that Tyler had actually that has a co-writing credit with anybody else mm-hmm. on. And with Tyler being who he is and has always been, I mean, spoiler alert, this is like, I'll be honest, like people grow, but I can tell you that he's probably at his core same dude that I met all those years ago. I know that sometimes fame it makes that difficult to maintain. But I was so proud once I understood what was happening, I was like, yo, like, you're taking a stand. You're drawing a line in the sand. And you are saying what you have always said, is, which is everybody is welcome here. Even though there is a majority, there is a big, large portion of that fan base that might not have known that. If you listen to the music, it's there. Mm-hmm. It always has been. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, like, the music video was really, really cool. It was the first time I shaved my mustache. First time I wore a bow tie, which was cool. First time swinging a pickaxe. First time in a mine.
Yeah.
And first time in Nashville. So it was an overall a really, really cool experience. And I'm, you know, I'm really, really grateful actually that I got to share that with my wife. You know, I'm really, really grateful that we had the opportunity to go down there together, because the two people that I called after I got the call was, I talked to my boss. I was like, hey, so I might have to go out of town for this music video. And then I called my wife and I was like, hey, so you want to go to Nashville? Shoot this, you know, and I would also be remiss to say that Silas and Tyler, they are just two of the kindest people I know, and they got her set up. You know, she had her own chair in the mine and everything, and got to like watch everything on the monitors, which was cool. The hardest part was, I'm so grateful that she went down there with me, because I had somebody that I could talk to about it, because I did sign an NDA. And so I was like, I don't know. Like, I was like, and even like, you know, people saying, oh, yes, Tyler coming out with a new album. I was like, I don't know. Have no idea.
Don't ask me these questions.
Yeah, I can't give you any information.
Yes.
But again, that just goes back to the conversation that we're having about that community. It's mm-hmm. like, it's not like, you know, I see it as a standpoint of like, we were coming up in this scene at the same time, you know. And you don't forget where you, I mean, some people do, but you don't really forget where you come from. And that's why when you go to a Tyler Childers show, the end of every Tyler Childers show, you'll hear him give a shout out to the places he played in Huntington and to Al's and the Green Lantern, because they're the two music venues that are still here from when he got his start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I, first of all, love that video, particularly because it feels like a love letter to Lexington in a lot of ways, and to Kentucky. And I think Silas has described it as that at times. But for me, from the outside, like, I don't know Tyler Childers beyond listening to him in my car most days and going to concerts, right? The reaction of Kentuckians particularly, and Lexingtonians particularly, to that surprise of, this is our guy, with a music video of our guys, right? Like, that this person that we love to listen to and seems to capture a piece of not just Eastern Kentucky and Huntington and that area, but also Lexington in ways that are very unique, tapped an Eastern Kentucky writer who now calls Lexington home, mm-hmm. to create a video with a bunch of Kentuckians in it about a Kentucky couple, right? Like, this is a real story. Maybe not that exact moment, but Kentuckians like that video exist and have existed across our history. And to watch fans, and maybe not even fans of Tyler himself, but fans of Silas and fans of you and folks who just love Kentucky, embrace that video over social media. The number of times it was sent to me, have you seen this? Indeed, I have. Do you know who that is? Because I do. There's my friend DeBron. You're on your own. It's not that you're my friend. There's DeBron Thomas, who I get to call my friend.
I'm your friend.
That piece of it felt so uniquely Kentucky, and maybe not uniquely Lexington, because I was getting it from people all over the state, but so Kentucky. And to capture it in a 4-minute love song is, I think, just the epitome of what this and everything we've been talking about.
I think that the part in the video that hit me the hardest the first time was when they're out in the field and James's character first shows signs of black lung.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a story that throughout this region and throughout this country, that is a real situation for a lot of people. So many people can relate to that. And so many people can also relate to the fact that the United States government has time and time again not supported minors who have black lung. And, you know, the other parts of it are kind of like, yes, it's wonderful that this was a, you know, that this was an opportunity for a gay couple. But like, this is love.
Mm-hmm.
No matter who it is, it's love. And when you see somebody going through that, you know, it's hard to push your own feelings aside to be there for that person. And I think that that's what I really appreciated about the music video, was it was a humanizing story. And just kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, this is exactly why representation matters. Because unless that is your lived experience, you can't write that story.
Right.
And if it is your lived experience, you have a whole lot of opportunities to write it and connect it in a different way.
I think even more so, going back to even before we were recording, when we were talking about the importance of you, when you have a platform, stepping aside for, aside's not the right word, but using that platform to uplift in ways that don't necessarily represent your identity. And that is the other piece. For me, that was the immediacy of, like, this is maybe the leading country artist at, you know, Americana, folk, whatever we want to call it. Obviously not Nashville pop country, but that's just me being an other country fan, right? Like, Tyler is the voice at this moment, probably, arguably. And choosing, knowing exactly, as you said earlier, that portions of his fan base hadn't caught it yet, mm-hmm. to just blatantly and openly create this beautiful song that then is embraced and made real by the poet laureate of the state that he calls home, is such a moment in that sort of uplift and using a platform that way, that artists obviously have the opportunity to do, but is a choice, as you said, and to think about it from a younger person who, what, 10 years ago was playing at Owls and at house parties and had every opportunity to not do that because his career was where it was. It's such a, I don't know, it feels very Kentucky.
I am a big believer. I mean, one of my, like, I carry a Spider-Man keychain, you know, Spider-Man on my keychain. Spider-Man's been my favorite superhero since I was a kid. But it's great power comes great responsibility. And, you know, when you get to a certain level, it is your responsibility to make that space. And the other part of that, too, is, again, representation matters. And I've shared this numerous times, and I'll share it again for the purposes of this recording, but I remember watching The Empire Strikes Back for the first time when I was, like, 6. And I loved the first Star Wars, but when they got the Cloud City, and we were introduced to the smoothest brother in the entire galaxy, also, like, the smoothest brother in the entire universe playing the smoothest brother in the galaxy, because ain't nobody smoother than Billy Dee. And the fact that Lando Calrissian was not one could say that he was a quote-unquote gangster, but he was not a stereotype, right? And, like, and at that point, before that, I think the only other, like, person that I had in my head that was comparable was Zach from the Power Rangers, the Black Power Ranger. But even that character was, like, his fighting style was using hip-hop choreography, and he was, you know. So when I saw Lando for the first time, I was like, oh, you know, we can be more than these things that they say that we are. And that is why I feel like that music video was so important, because I know that somewhere there are kids who see that and are like, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
And they might not see that in any other medium. And especially if you've got a situation where other people in your family are saying that, you know, not making assumptions, mm-hmm. but just it is a thing that happens.
Right.
And you can only step into your full power if you know that that exists. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to see yourself before you can make it happen for yourself. And I really applaud all of the people who worked on that video, because everyone understood the assignment. Everyone understood that, yes, this is a beautiful song. Yes, this is a beautiful story. And the impact that this will have on future generations, we have to do this right. And I'm so grateful to have been asked to be part of it. And, you know, every time I hear that song, I tear up. Like, this, just the piano at the beginning just gets me every time. But also, you know, like, the fact that Silas, like you said, really was intentional about bringing in some Kentucky things. Like, the chair scene at the end is a direct reference to Mama, He's Crazy by the Judds, which they're from Ashland. So, like, it's all woven in there, and it is a love letter to everybody and everything, basically saying that no matter what, you matter. And when we see the Jasper at the beginning of the you know, or at the beginning and at the end, you know, you see that he has lived a life. He's lived a long life. And it's not said really how long the two of them were together. But, you know, love is love. And that never goes away. And sometimes we move forward without that person, but it doesn't mean that they didn't have an impact in our life. And I just am so grateful that that story was able to be told in that way, so that so many other people can see themselves in something that they might not have seen themselves in before.
I think that is the perfect sort of encapsulation in what we've been talking about the whole time, right? That's what music does. And so, given that, I think this is a perfect place to thank you for talking with us and for sharing a little bit about your own musical journey and where it falls in the Lexington scene. And everyone should go find DeBron and the DeBron Thomas Trio and all of his work, and know that this is a guy that came to Lexington in 2008 and has made Lexington your home and is doing amazing work in the community, particularly around your music. So thank you for sharing it with us, and thank you for being here.
I would just like to say thank you to first of all, to you, Mandy. Thank you so much for having me. And I would just like to express appreciation for the music community here. There are so many people who poured into me when I was unable to do that for myself. And there are a lot of musicians who saved my life on numerous occasions. So I just want to express how grateful and thankful I am for you, but also how grateful and thankful I am for our community. You know, Gerard was a dear friend of mine. Marty Charters was a dear friend of mine. Todd Copeland was a dear friend of mine. Mark Falk was a dear friend of mine. There are just so many people in this community. And of course, we didn't really talk about him, but I just want to mention T.D. Young, because T.D. is another person who created a space for us to be able to express ourselves. And I don't know that there's anyone in this town who does that better than T.D., because anybody can play at T.D.'s on a Monday night. It doesn't matter if you just started playing last week. It doesn't matter if you've been playing for 35 years. It is a space for musicians. It is a space for music lovers, and it is a space for our community. And those things only exist when people who have the ability to create them do that. And sometimes that's a lot of people all at once. But, you know, we have to have that understanding that in order for us to build this thing that we want to see, we have to do the things to lay the foundation. And that way we can leave something for the next generation. So I just wanted to say to the Lexington music community, I love you. I appreciate you. And I don't know where I would be without you. And I truly mean that. And I know that we have been through some hardships over the last couple of years, and I am grateful to be able to see the continued resilience. When we lose people, when music venues close, we always work to provide an opportunity for each other. And that's the world I want to live in. And I just want to express that I'm so grateful.
It was having DeBron is so great.
Incredible. And, you know, he's a friend, he's a colleague, and he's someone that I'm very proud to know.
Same. Completely the same. And I had the real pleasure to see him a couple of early in April at an event for celebrating the written word and literary community in Lexington. And it was the first time I'd seen him on a big stage in a building. I've seen him outside performing, but seeing him at the Kentucky Theater was just so powerful. So if you have the chance to catch DeBron playing music, do it.
Totally within his element.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, all these different events coming up in April and even May, we can kind of give a quick shout out to 250lex.com, but also the museum.
Yes. So, of course, come to the museum, come to lexhistory.org to see everything that we're doing. Sign up for our email list to keep up to date and get excited for Diversity Month. And we're going to have some really cool events in the museum space in May.
And a special guest, too.
And a very special guest.
All right. We tease enough. Thanks again for your time today, Mandy.
Thanks, Alan.
And that's all the time that we have for today on Lex Talk History, but we'll see you again soon.
You've been listening to Lex Talk History, a monthly podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, or download Lex Talk History from the podcast page at WUKY.org. And if you haven't done so already, please make plans to visit the Lexington History Museum soon. Get started on your tour at LexHistory.org.